You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks, presented by Zaxby's. DJ Bucky back with you. And we have our takeaway episode today, Buck. And man, we could have done 100 takeaways off of what happened this past week of football.
DJ, I'm really excited because for the first time all year, we saw defenses show up. I'm beginning to see a level of football and a kind of football that I remember and recognize, defense playing a big part in some of these teams winning games.
Yeah, no, there was some impressive defensive performances. There's some teams missing some key players. How do they overcome that? I thought it was an interesting theme as well from the week. I want to encourage everybody, if you're just checking us out for the first time, you can find our podcast. Go to NFL.com/podcast, Apple Podcasts, really wherever you get your podcasts, you can find Move the Sticks, where we've got you covered as we look at NFL games, we look at the draft and some of the top players that are coming into that process as we get further along in the year. Also have the YouTube page. You can find, I've got some videos there, youtube.com/movethesticks. Bucky's column each and every week, NFL.com/Bucky Brooks. Look, we can do this forever. We've got lots of content for you, is what that's all I'm saying here. Buck, let's get these 10 takeaways cranked up here. Why don't you start us off with the first one?
DJ, the steel curtain is back.
Mayfield shotgun snap, throws over the middle, intercepted. It is Minka Fitzpatrick, 25, 20, 15, 10, touchdown, Minka. People have been asking, where's Minka Fitzpatrick? Baker Mayfield just found out.
I mean, you got to like that. Minka Fitzpatrick really hadn't been a major impact player for this defense, shows up with a pick six. And DJ, this defense played lights out against the Browns. Browns had the number one rushing offense coming in. They did a good job of suffocating the running game, held the rushing attack to only 75 rushing yards on 22 attempts. But what I really liked about this defense, 4 sacks, 2 turnovers, did a great job of imposing their will on the Browns. And they showed the Browns that this rivalry isn't quite a rivalry yet because the other side can't keep up with what the Pittsburgh Steelers are able to do.
Yeah, and this is disappointing on the other side of it from the Browns, because it's a Browns team that's sandwiched some wins together in an impressive fashion. But the bread on that sandwich has been getting blown out by the Baltimore Ravens in the division, now getting blown out by the Pittsburgh Steelers in the division. So while you can definitely feel good about the Browns trending in the right direction, I think when you look at the class in that division, they still very much find themselves in third.
Yeah, no, it's tough because that division is loaded at the top. The Baltimore Ravens and the Pittsburgh Steelers look like title contenders. And I think for the Browns to catch up, they got to get better play, more consistent play from Baker Mayfield. He was playing with a rib injury. It clearly affected his play. But at the end of the day, the quarterbacks are really what separate those top teams. And Baker Mayfield ranks third behind Lamar Jackson and Ben Roethlisberger in that division. And that is why the Browns right now are sitting in third.
Yeah, and I thought that was strength versus strength in that game. And you look at the Pittsburgh D-line, the Browns O-line, two units that played very well. I thought it was a decided advantage there for Pittsburgh up front, as good as it gets in the NFL in that regard. My first takeaway, we're going to stay on the defensive side of the ball, that defensive theme. And that team down in Tampa, they've got a championship-caliber defense.
Rodgers takes the snap, 3rd and 10, drops, pressure coming against the pass. It's intercepted, picked off down the sideline, 20, 15, 10, 5, touchdown Tampa Bay! Touchdown Buccaneers, Jamal Dean! First turnover of the season by the Pack, and it's a pick six.
How about that? That was a huge play. Think about Rodgers going early in that game, had all kinds of confidence, had the swag going after his touchdown, and then it just came crashing down with a little flurry of turnovers there led by that pick six by Dean. And I think when you look at this Bucs defense, we know what they can do with Shaq Barrett, JPP up front. The young secondary is really starting to come together. Again, the youngest secondary in the National Football League. You saw Dean make a play there. Evans made a play in the back end as well. They've got a lot of talent. Carlton Davis is one of the better young corners in the NFL. So I like where they are there. So you're good up front. You've got good secondary. But it's a second level, Buck, that makes everything go on this defense. And starts with Levante David, who should be a legitimate defensive player of the year candidate for all he does for this team in terms of the run, coverage, range, leadership, energy. He does all those things. And the guy next to him and Devin White, pretty special as well. So we look at the three levels of the defense coming off talking about the Steelers. I think Tampa's in that same boat where really you can get excited about all three levels of that defense.
Oh, I absolutely think you should be excited about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense. Todd Bowles has done a great job of getting this side of the ball to play. And as much as we have talked about the Buccaneers offense and Tom Brady, really it will be the defense that carries them as far as they want to go. Up front, and Ndamukong Suh showing up and being a menace to Aaron Rodgers. Knocked him around, battered him, really disrupted the rhythm of the Packers passing game. And oh, by the way, they said that no one can run on them and they didn't allow the Packers to run on them. That was critical. But you talk about this young secondary, man, so many players to like. Carlton Davis, Jamal Dean, Antoine Winfield Jr. showing up. Ty Bowles, Kevin Ross, they've done a good job of developing these guys. And as they continue to get together and that chemistry comes together, man, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are a title contender. And it's because of the defense, not necessarily the offense, which is what we talked about all offseason.
And you go to the, if you go to the offense, the player who's been the most impactful for them actually is Ronald Jones. It's not Tom Brady. It's not Mike Evans. It's not Rob Gronkowski, although Gronk had a little bit better game this week. But Ronald Jones has kind of been that engine for that offense.
He absolutely has. DJ, three straight games with over 100 yards. Everyone has talked about Rojo and how he was going to fit in and Leonard Fournette and Shady McCoy. What does it mean? Bruce Arians firmly backed him, and he has rewarded him with solid play. And if they can run the ball like they were able to run the ball, man, look out, because now it takes all the pressure off Tom Brady to have to carry this offense with his arm.
Yeah, hat tip to Jason Light building this roster. They've done a good job. A lot of young players contributing for this football team. All right, keep us going here, Buck. What's number three?
Hey, DJ, we got to stay with the defense. The Bears keep finding ways to win.
Bowles under center, one back set, David Montgomery, snap. Keeper, Bowles, tries to jam it in there. He's in for the touchdown on the quarterback keeper. There are your first points of the third quarter of 2020.
You know, DJ, it's funny, of all the highlights that we could pull from that game, that's the most exciting one on offense. The defense continues to carry the way from the Chicago Bears. When I look at this Bears defense, I'm looking at a unit with Khalil Mack being able to get pressure off the edge. Roquan Smith and Danny Trevathan combined for 22 tackles. That is a terrific effort from the second level defenders. And then for them, it is all about the takeaways and the sacks. Three takeaways, four sacks. Chuck Pagano is doing a really good job with his defense. And as Matt Nagy tries to fix the offense, the defense is steady Eddie, and that is why they're off to a 5-1 start.
Yeah, I didn't think Teddy Bridgewater really got comfortable in this game either, and that's something he had shown, just getting into a groove with his play caller there in Joe Brady. I just never felt that they found the rhythm in this game, and Teddy never got comfortable. A lot of that was the pressure they were able to generate up front there with that Bears group. So I don't know. I'm still a little bit skeptical of this Bears team. I know what the record says and where that places them. I'm still a little bit in wait-and-see mode. I don't know if you saw. Did you see Foles' comments after the game?
Yeah, he was interesting. He's passionate.
Very interesting.
He's passionate.
Very passionate. Very passionate and mentioning the fact that, hey, you know, we're winning games. We know we have a long way to go, but the good news is we're communicating with each other. I believe in the guys. I believe in the coaching staff. But we need to get better. We will get better. But that was a good – that's one of those teaching tapes. You know, we talk about teaching tape with what you see on the field. That was a press conference teaching tape for young quarterbacks.
Absolutely. And I love Foles for his leadership ability and what he stands for. And I think that has really been why Matt Nagy wanted him in. He's a leader, and I think guys gravitate to him, not necessarily because of his skill level, but just because he understands how to manage the game. He knows how to play winning football. He's won at the highest level, obviously winning a Super Bowl MVP, and that is just good enough for the Bears at this stage. We'll see if that offense can come along, but we know their defense is certainly good enough to keep them in contention.
All right, let's get to the team that's probably the most disrespected team in the NFL when you look at their record and look at how little talk they get about what they've done on the grass. That's Tennessee Titans, and when it comes to them, their offensive coordinator, Arthur Smith, he's a name you better get to know.
First and 10, Titans from their own 6-yard line. Give it to Henry. Looking for some room, finds it. 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45, 40, 35, 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5, end zone. Ladies and gentlemen, 94 yards.
Mike Keith, Mike Keith is the best. I could listen to Mike Keith calls all day long there on Titans radio. But you look at what they've done offensively. Look at Derrick Henry in this game, the yards he's piled up. But you look at the way Ryan Tannehill is playing, really putting himself in that MVP discussion with how efficient he's been, as well as showing you some more explosive play at the quarterback position. Arthur Smith is the man who's designed the whole thing. And Arthur Smith is somebody that has a great reputation inside the NFL. He's somebody that kind of has worked his way up through the process. And I think when you look at the combination, Buck, of the physicality and the quarterback-friendly nature of this offense, I figure people need to start talking on the outside. Inside the NFL, he's talked about, but on the outside, Arthur Smith needs to start getting some love. And I guarantee you he's going to be interviewed for some head coaching gigs once they come up here soon.
Yeah, DJ, I think he is a unique name. One, he's a Tar Heel, so I'm really excited to see Arthur Smith have a lot of success. Two, I think his background is unique. Coming from originally the defensive side of the ball, but being an offensive lineman who has worked with the tight end position to now ascending to the offensive coordinator spot, I think what he is, he's an example to ownership that you don't necessarily have to hire a former quarterback to be a guy that can help the quarterback play at a high level. Arthur Smith has been able to take a running game, make it creative and explosive. He's been able to tailor an offensive pass attack for Ryan Tannehill that has really elevated his play. And I think because of all of those things and the level of physicality and toughness that the Titans display, he absolutely should be someone to watch as a head coaching candidate. He has done a terrific job in his second season as a play caller.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is a Titans team that is just complete. I mean, they're not, there's nothing really sexy about them. Although AJ Brown, man, when he's out there, as good as it gets for a young wideout. But this is a team that's just, there's no holes in them. They're just very consistent across the board, offense, defense, special teams. They don't give away points. They don't give away games. You got to go in there and earn it and beat them. And it's a really, really rock solid football team right now. And you know, if you look at the styles make fights argument, you know, we saw against Kansas City, if they can control the line of scrimmage, they can control the clock, and now they're a little bit more explosive as well to be able to score points as well as you know, kind of dominating possession of the game. It's going to be an interesting matchup for Kansas City as we kind of look forward into the postseason.
You know, DJ, it's not only Kansas City, but the Baltimore Ravens. The Baltimore Ravens will have to wince if they have to see the Tennessee Titans in the playoffs because they know that the Tennessee Titans has knocked them out before. And so their style of play, to me, always travels and it always works well in the postseason. They can control it. They can run it down your throat. And Derrick Henry is an absolute man-child. I feel bad that I didn't give him enough credit when we graded him coming out of Alabama. Look, his ability to run the ball, we knew that. But catching that little swing pass and going 53 yards to set up the winning drive, that is exactly what you want to see from your running back, big body playmaker who is absolutely getting it done, 200-yard day. The Titans are to be feared. They are definitely a team that you have to worry about when we think about the postseason tournament.
And all the running backs that have gotten these second contracts, who would have thought the big physical bruiser is the one that the second contract money is actually looking pretty good thus far after paying him a little bit of cash. All right, let's keep the coaching theme going here, Buck. Give me another one.
Raheem Morris has the Atlanta Falcons rolling.
Atlanta's going for it. Tight end right, three receivers left. Ryan stepping up. Matt thought about it, now gives ground, going to flip it down the field. It's caught, Jones. Julio, 10-5, touchdown Atlanta. Amazing.
DJ, we always talk about it. New coach, new energy. Whenever you fire the coach and the interim is elevated, everybody in the rooms, their ears perk up because they now know we're on notice because once the coach goes, the players are next. Raheem Morris did a great job of tapping into that new energy. They talked about how he made the team uncomfortable through the practice week. No repeats, more urgency. I think the best thing he did, he got the defense playing well. They played with their eyes on the quarterback, three interceptions. And then on offense, he made it really, really simple. Give the ball to your best players and get out the way. Matt Ryan, over 300 yards passing. Julio Jones, 100 yards through the air. That's what you want to see from the Atlanta Falcons. And because of that, this is the Falcons team that we've been waiting to see. We will see if he is able to keep it up. But for a first game, look really good in Atlanta.
And you flip it over to the other side, man. What maybe the most disappointing team to me in the NFL is the Minnesota Vikings. With what the expectation was, winning a playoff game last year, looked like they'd kind of got over the hump with Kirk Cousins. He's got two years now and I think, $66 million. So they're committed to him for this year and next year. He's not playing well. And to me, I know a lot of people have tried to point to the, well, you know, you take away Stephon Diggs. Justin Jefferson's the best rookie receiver in the NFL thus far, the way he's played and as explosive as he's been. So I'm not buying that. It's not working right now. It's not clicking right now. I know you've pointed to the fact that they made some defensive staff changes, but man, it does not look good right now. Houston's the only win they've got. That was a winless Houston team at the time for the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah, no, it doesn't look great, and I'm surprised because I actually thought that he would play better with Gary Kubiak calling the plays. I think what is now evident, this team on offense, they run through Dalvin Cook. You remove Dalvin Cook from the equation, this offense is nothing like the offense that we normally see. And so I think it's really important when they get back, it has to be a lot of 33 running and catching. He has to be the guy that really makes this offense go. And Kirk Cousins has to go to the sidecar because he certainly can't drive it.
Yeah, he's definitely Robin and not the Batman there for that offense. All right, let's talk about a quarterback who did rise to the occasion. That was in Indianapolis and Phillip Rivers.
Rivers back to throw on 1st and 10 in the end zone. A diving catch for Jack Doyle. Touchdown! Touchdown! Jack Doyle! And the Colts are tying the ball game right now. A 14-yard beautiful throw from Phillip Rivers.
Yeah, this was a game where the Indianapolis Colts got down big early, and you thought, man, this could get away from them, and you're starting to, you know, oh, man, if Rivers doesn't play well in this game, coming off the clunker that he had the week before, you know, are we talking about making a change? Is that coming? And then Phillip Rivers showed he's got a little bit left, Buck, just throwing dimes all over the field, played really, really well in this game, and without much of a running game either. So he put the team on his back. He's still capable of doing that. I think the challenge for Phillip Rivers is going to be consistently doing this. And I don't think you want to ask him to do this on a regular basis. He can pull one of these rabbits out of the hat like this, you know, here or there, but I still think they've got to get back to being a more committed to the run team, being a little bit more balanced and not putting this offense completely on the shoulders of Phillip Rivers, because that wasn't what the intention was when he was signed. They were going to be physical. He's just going to manage the game. That's their formula going forward. Well, in this game, they had to get away from that. He had to go chase points and he got it done. But I don't think they want to live like this on a weekly basis.
No, I definitely don't think they want to, nor should they try and live like this. Phillip Rivers is a very prideful, very competitive player. He heard all week the whispers, the rumors about, hey, they should take Phillip Rivers out. They should put Jacoby Brissett in. Phillip Rivers is killing them. He's holding this offense back with his turnovers. And so, look, he dug down deep and he pulled out a vintage performance. Now, there's something to be learned from that. He has that in him, but Frank Wright and the staff, they can't count on Phillip Rivers to do this each and every week. It has to be driven through the offensive line, the running game. The defense has to play well. And then if you need Phillip Rivers, you can break the glass, but you don't want to get in a situation where you need Phillip Rivers to be the guy that's the focal point of the offense. I would rather him play a managerial role where he can come in and make some plays when you need it, but not because you have to get him from each and every week.
Perfect result to me as well on the other side with the Cincinnati Bengals. When you have a young team like this with a rookie quarterback and you're in the building phase, nobody on the personnel side will ever admit this, but you kind of like the fact we're competitive. The quarterback's playing well. The quarterback's making plays, but we lost, so we can still get a high pick and give him some more help next year in the draft. Like, you're not going, the Bengals are not going anywhere this year. So, you know, if they're 3-13, 4-12 versus being 7-9, at this point in the rebuilding process, they'll never admit this, Buck, but I promise you they'd be okay with the result.
Look, they've been in every game, DJ. They have battled. They have played hard. I think that's a testament to Zach Taylor doing a really good job. I think the young quarterback is going to be a star. He has lit it up. He does a great job of getting the ball out, and he's developed a synergy and a rapport with his playmakers. They just need to keep adding pieces around him, namely up front to the offensive line. But, yes, if you're Duke Tobin, if you're Zach Taylor, you feel good about how your young team is playing. You would like to get in the win column, but it is okay if they get some more L's, because that does bring them a better player in the draft next spring.
Yeah, and you think about the fact if they could be up there in one of those top picks where a quarterback is available, now you're sitting pretty because you've already got Joe Burrow, you have a trade chip, you can get a boatload of picks and really try and improve around your young signal caller there. All right, Buck, what do we got going on in New York?
The Giants keep fighting.
Here's Kyle Allen. Takes the snap. Oh, now rolls to his left. He now stops, backpedals, throws it towards the end zone, and it falls incomplete. The conversion fails, and the Giants still lead 20-19.
Go, Kyle, go, Kyle, go, Kyle, go, Kyle. Oh, I know. That's phenomenal.
I don't know what happened to no cheering in the press box, but evidently that is okay. So for the New York Giants here, DJ, we talked about Joe Judge and his tough methods, and we kind of laughed a little bit about some of the stuff that we heard coming out of there during training camp. But I will say this, when I look at the Giants on tape, they are a hard-playing team. They are playing hard. They're playing with energy. They're not very talented, but, man, they get after it. And some of that grit, determination, effort, and hustle has enabled them to overcome some of their deficiencies. This is a tough team. This is a team that's playing with discipline. Defensively, Patrick Graham has those guys playing. And I think there's some things that you can look at and you can build upon if you're Joe Judge. The quarterback is still up and down, but he did show his athleticism, had over 70 yards rushing. This is a team that, look, they're not very good. They're not very talented, but I do like how they're playing. And I think that will be a nice launching point for them to eventually have success, maybe in a year or two.
Yeah, look, this is a team you can't argue with the effort. I mean, they play hard each and every week. They've been competitive in just about every game as well, without Saquon Barkley, their best player. So, I think you give Joe Judge a lot of credit for that. But the other side of it, Buck, is when you have as many high picks as they've had over the last, 5 to 6 years, they've got to get some more impact from some of those guys. When you've got a left tackle that has not played well, when you had your pick of the litter of the top four tackles in this draft, and it looked to me at the time like you clearly took the fourth best guy. And that's been a little bit of a concern there with the Giants. But, when it comes to Joe Judge, the effort that he's got these guys playing with, you got to tip your cap.
Yeah, I think it's interesting about Andrew Thomas. Andrew Thomas was benched for the game on Sunday. And the reason he was benched is because he was late to a meeting. I think with Joe Judge, I can commend him because his actions and his words match up. He talked about being a team that pays real close attention to the details. Sitting down the fourth overall pick, a guy who is expected to be a blue chip player because he's late, to me, I think that sends a message to the entire team. Everyone is treated the same. And I think that is going to help them as they think about turning this program around, trying to get everybody on the same page.
Yeah, I think to me, if he had been late to one meeting and his performance had been at a high level, maybe you extend some grace there and try and understand it. But when your performance is not up to par and then now you're not dotting all the I's and crossing all the T's, no, I think it is smart to send that message and sit him down for a quarter. But he's got to play better when he's out there for them, help protect Daniel Jones. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens to that team going forward. But I know one thing. You watch them, and I agree with you. That's the one thing that jumped out to me when my takeaway was, defensively, they play hard. They run to the football, a very, very competitive group. The wins haven't come, but this is the first one. Maybe they'll get on a roll here. Let's stay inside that division. Man, it's a bad division. The Philadelphia Eagles just unable to overcome the injuries.
Wentz under center, first and goal. Wentz sneaks, and we are in! Touchdown, Eagles! A two-point conversion can tie it.
Yeah, the two-point conversion, unfortunately for the Eagles fans, was not converted. There was a valiant comeback by the Eagles in this game, but as I was watching it, you look at all the injuries that have piled up for them, which have been numerous, and you look at the offensive line and Wentz getting beaten up again. That was an issue. Gosh, I want to say it was the third play of the game. He has a deep ball to John Hightower. This should have been a touchdown. Should have been an 80-yard touchdown. He drops it. There was another big drop later on in the game. So you're looking at a team that's missing, really, you'd say, their top three wideouts, with Alshon Jeffrey, who is unable to get healthy, DeSean Jackson, who they re-signed, who's had a history of not being healthy, and then Jalen Reagor, the rookie, their first-round pick, is not out there. So you're missing your top three guys, not to mention Dallas Goedert, who's, to me, one of the best young tight ends in the NFL. And I give Carson Wentz credit. I mean, it wasn't pretty at times. He still has some errant throws. Mechanically, he's a little bit off. But, Buck, he willed this team back into the game. He gave them an opportunity to try and tie this football game late. I was encouraged from that standpoint because I've been really worried about Wentz. But, man, they're unable to account for all these injuries that they've had, and they haven't been able to get the job done.
No, they just haven't been able to get it done. And you talked about the injuries. We talked about the inconsistent play from Carson Wentz. He does flash. I think the one thing that showed up They're trying to use his athleticism a little more. I think that has to be his sweet spot, because when he uses his athleticism, I think that's when he plays at his best. And so I believe he's beginning to come out of his funk a little bit because of the way that they're utilizing him. But right now, he just doesn't have enough around him. They just aren't healthy enough right now to compete. They're saving grace. They're playing in a bad division where no one has run away from them. The Cowboys are their main competition, and the Cowboys are just as banged up. And so we'll see. If they're able to right the ship, they still can walk away and hoist the division title at the end of this. We'll just see how it plays out.
Now, let me ask you this question real quick on the personnel side, because it was I understand why they did it, because I knew they wanted to get faster, and that was their sole focus, was getting faster, and they wanted somebody that could really take the top off the defense. But to me, when you had Justin Jefferson and Jalen Reagor, those players were not close, in my opinion, in terms of talent. And it's one of those deals where you can say, okay, if you're can be a coach driven, you can say, okay, man, we just have to have this. If we don't have this, it's not going to work. Well, lo and behold, you get injuries. Just take the best football player, because guys are going to come and go. There's going to be injuries. Different things happen. But you bypass, like for me on a grading scale, would be bypassing a 6'7", 6'9", player for a 6'3", 6'4", player because he fits a little bit better. I think you get in trouble when you do that.
Yeah, DJ, I think that's the challenge when you're operating in the personnel world and you have coaches and scouts and how guys view it. There's no doubt that Justin Jefferson was a very complete player. During his time at LSU, he had played outside and inside. And so you knew that he would be a guy that could play three, maybe four spots for you if you bring him in. Jalen Reagor was enticing because he was explosive. He was dynamic as a returner. So maybe you thought that you could do some of the catch and run pass game, but he hasn't been available. And so when you look out in Minnesota and you see Justin Jefferson absolutely killing it from day one, I do wonder if you have a bit of buyer's remorse. It's a lesson to be learned as a scout. Man, just take the best player. Don't overthink it. If we were playing in the park, who would be the guy that you would want to take with your first pick for the Turkey Bowl? It's as simple as that. Give me Justin Jefferson and let's go play.
Yeah, and I think really the unique thing with him, there was a couple players in that draft where we would make the case high floor and a high ceiling. And I think Justin Jefferson was one of those guys. You weren't going to miss on him. And look, the jury's still out here on Jalen Reagor. He hasn't been healthy. He hasn't been out on the field. So we'll see when he gets healthy. Maybe he gets out there and maybe he provides what the Eagles are missing. All right, what's number nine here, Buck?
The Dolphins D shows up.
Back to throw Flacco again. Going after him. Gets it off. Throwing it behind. And it's intercepted by X-Man. What an interception.
Wow.
Dove for the football in front of Smith, the wide receiver, and picked it off.
The Miami Dolphins do what good teams should do. They were playing a bad football team, and they absolutely beat them up. Defense showed up, was very impressive, had three sacks, 10 hits on the quarterback, held the Jets to 263 yards, only allowed 13 first downs in this game. And I will say, this wasn't an A-plus performance by the Miami Dolphins offensively, but defensively, they took care of business. And what they're building down in Miami is really intriguing. Brian Flores has the defense really playing at a very solid level on the uptick. And if they can get more of that offense coming together as they continue to build and wait for Tua Tagovailoa to come along, the Miami Dolphins will have a chance to really inch closer to the Buffalo Bills and maybe even surpass them as the team that takes over the AFC East with the New England Patriots coming back to the pack.
Yeah, look, I think they're heading in the right direction here. They've got some more picks next year in the draft as well. If Miami can cash those in, man, they've got a chance to really have a good football team for a long time here in that division with Buffalo. Obviously in the same boat there with those two, the young, talented teams. The Jets are going to have their picks over the next two drafts where they're going to have to try and catch up, because you could see it in this game, the gap between those two, it is not close right now. And the only thing worse than watching a bad team, if you're a fan of a franchise, watching a bad team is watching a bad team with older players. When you've got a backfield with Joe Flacco and Frank Gore, these are wasted reps, truthfully. I mean, you're not learning anything about your young guys. So that's what's discouraging there in New York.
Yeah, it's a lot of things to be discouraged about. I mean, obviously, you talk about the lack of talent, the older players that are occupying key positions and taking a bunch of the reps. You have infighting with the coaches, defensive coordinator throwing veil shots at the head coach, offensive coordinator. And so it's just a mess right now. And what they desperately need, they need to somehow find a way to get a win. And when you look at their schedule, There don't appear to be any easy wins coming. And so, man, you talk about a team that is climbing and inching closer to being right in the mix for the Trevor Lawrence sweepstakes if he comes out. Yeah, it's just not a good thing. It's not a good thing for the New York Jets right now.
Yeah, I know there's been a topic brought up about if you're the Jets, do you try and trade Sam Darnold before the trade deadline? And to me, that I don't think that really necessarily makes sense because a couple things. Number one, the suitors are not going to be there because you're not going to be able to get a quarterback up to speed at this point in time to get him on the field that make an impact for you. And the teams that are going to covet Sam Darnold, the teams we've mentioned in the past, are going to be teams that are picking towards the bottom of the first round next year with aging quarterbacks, which means they're going to be priced out of the top three guys. The top three quarterbacks in the draft are going to go in the top five, top 10. They won't sniff those guys. So if you're a team like New Orleans with an aging quarterback, Indy with an aging quarterback, we'll see what happens with Jimmy Garoppolo and that commitment with him and Kyle Shanahan. What does that relationship look like? New Orleans, you know, who I mentioned there with Breeze, we'll see what happens, you know, if Tom Brady, how he comes through the rest of the year. Pittsburgh with Roethlisberger. These teams are all teams picking in the back of one that need that next quarterback. Those are the trade partners, I think, that make the most sense for Sam Darnold. So to me, it doesn't make any sense that they're not going to want to do that trade before the deadline this year. That's an after-the-season move. And if you're the Jets, gosh, they look terrible right now, Buck, but you can't assume you're going to have one of those first three picks. God only knows. Maybe you fall into three wins, and now you're picking four or five, and you've traded Sam Darnold, and you don't have an upgrade available to you where you pick. So that, to me, doesn't make a lot of sense.
Well, I think right now you got to keep him, because what you want to do is you want to showcase him. DJ, it's almost like you're selling your house. You want to get the model, get a showroom ready. You want to bring in all the furniture, let people imagine like, oh, this is what it looks like. You want to show off Sam Darnold, either to keep him and justify why you may bypass one of the quarterback prospects in the draft, or to get him ready to inflate his value so someone will give you a number one pick for him.
Well, just think about this. One last encouraging note here for Jets fans. You could be in a situation where you have 1-1, right? So you got the first overall pick. We assume that'd be Trevor Lawrence, right? So you take Trevor Lawrence. You then would trade Sam. I believe you get a late one for Sam. So now you're picking 1-1. You get your quarterback. You've got a late one for Sam. You've got a late one from Seattle in the Jamal Adams trade. And you've got the first pick of the second round. That would be four, you know, pillar players you could potentially get there, where you could get your quarterback for the future on that rookie contract, edge rusher, corner, you know, another tackle, you know, playmaker, whatever. You can, what I'm saying is there's exciting days ahead. If you can nail those picks going forward, you'll start to see the Jets pick up pretty quick.
You know, the Jets have done this before with four picks in the first round when they had Chad Pennington, John Abraham, Sean Ellis, and then they picked up Tyden. I think they picked up maybe Anthony Beck in the first round. So they have been able to do this, and that really carried them and set them up for a nice sustained run when Chad Pennington was there. So it's not new to them, but it's about putting yourself in a position to get the picks and then picking the right players. But this should be an opportunity for the Jets to hit rock bottom, but to bounce back hopefully pretty quickly.
Yeah, there you go. All right, let's get to the final takeaway here. That is the 49ers, their big win in the division over the Rams. That offense runs best when it's through George Kittle and Deebo Samuel.
Kittle, three receivers left and Kittle right. They throw over the middle. It is caught by George Kittle. He'll race for a touchdown. 10, 5, touchdown! San Francisco! 4th-and-2, Kittle over the middle.
Yeah, he's such a unique player. I mean, Kittle, because of what he does, we talk about all the time what he does in the run game, Buck. But then also you got somebody who can run clean routes, can run every route imaginable out there. But then it's what he does after the catch. That, to me, is what sets him apart. And that's why I like him even more than I like Kelce, because of what he can do after the catch with the ball in his hands. That's what makes him so special. And then Deebo Samuel, if you want to pitch him the ball, if you want to just get him the ball out in space and let him go, those two guys, I say they run best when it runs through them because that's their identity. They're physical, tough dudes to get on the ground with the ball in their hands. That's why it's fun to watch it when they're both out there healthy at the same time.
Look, DJ, I look at this offense, and this offense reminds me of a throwback offense that you normally would see on a high school field on Friday nights. They're basically a wing tee football team in terms of everybody touches the ball as runners and receivers. I wouldn't be surprised to see George Kittle get it on the end around because their versatility in terms of their best players, George Kittle, Deebo Samuels, enables Kyle Shanahan to get really, really creative. We saw Deebo Samuel take basically a jet sweep in a critical moment to get the first down to ice the game. We saw Brandon Ayuk and what he's able to do. So when I look at this 49ers team, I see two wing backs in Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk. I see a versatile playmaker who's a hybrid at tight end and George Kittle. And I see a masterful puppeteer and Kyle Shanahan finding a way to get everybody done. If they get consistent play from their quarterback, even though we've kind of cast them aside and said they're a notch below the Seattle Seahawks, there's a path for the San Francisco 49ers to still win this division.
Yeah, man, I just hate to see what happened with Nick Bosa, because if you look at the way this offense is starting to come together, starting to see those pieces all be healthy and on the field at the same time, what they can be. But, man, that is such a huge hole. When you take out DeForest Buckner, obviously, with the trade, and mm-hmm. then now you have no Nick Bosa, man, it just they don't quite have that same stinger up front that we saw last year.
No, they absolutely don't. They're not the same on defense. But I will give Robert Saleh credit. He was under a little criticism because the Miami Dolphins absolutely worked them over. They bounced back as a powerful unit, did a good job of keeping the ball in front, and contained a Rams offense that had been playing pretty well prior to this game.
Yeah, I mean, let's finish it up here. When you look at that division, the NFC West, there are no easy games, and the Rams can look like they were cruising and playing great ball, and it's going to be them in Seattle. Do not forget about those San Francisco 49ers.
Inspired by ongoing conversations with players, the NFL launched NFL Votes to empower and improve our communities by exercising the right to vote. Join the NFL family by registering to vote today and make your voice heard this November. Visit NFL.com/votes to learn more.
Well, Buck, it's been a fun show today going through everything that happened this last weekend, man. It feels like the NFL just keeps throwing us curveballs in every way possible, but this is a fun show today, man.
It is a fun show, and I think it's an exciting time because as we go into next week, we're seeing some top teams battle it out. And as these teams begin to really settle into their identity, we're beginning to separate the contenders from the pretenders.
Absolutely. And one game next week, by the way, mark it on your calendars, Steelers-Titans. Cannot wait to see that one, to see who reigns supreme in the AFC. An incredible slate of games next week, which we will have you covered on the recap Takeaway podcast a week from now. So I want to thank you guys so much for checking us out. Thanks for listening to the podcast. You can find it at Apple Podcast or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find all of our videos, NFL.com/MTS video as well. That's going to do it for us today. Bucky, appreciate you as always. We'll catch you next time right here on Move the Sticks, presented by Zaxby's.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.